The schooner had been on Koba even longer than Kelrick, sitting in an abandoned port. Despite some automated upkeep, its condition was worn. Repair costs had probably increased, but the credit line had a good cushion built into it. The fee schedule appeared. Kelrick stared at the screen. He didn't even have enough to land, let alone rent a berth. Repairs were out of the question. The console beeped. Funds insufficient. Please transmit an alternate access code. Neither the audio nor visual system on the schooner worked, so he typed at the antiquated keyboard. I don't have an alternate code. How do you plan to pay your bill? The PA inquired. This vessel is in military use. ISC will cover the fees. That option is no longer available. The PA shaded its glyphs with impatience. Kelrick blinked. Imperial Space Command no longer covered its officers? He found that hard to believe. Contact ISC. They have no representative available to contact about financial matters associated with this port. Why not? Unknown. How could it be unknown? ISC was, or had been, the single most powerful force in Skolian life. Now he couldn't get enough credit to dock one old schooner? He had taken this ship from the planet Koba, where he had been imprisoned these past 18 years, while the rest of humanity believed him dead. As an ISC officer, he had the right to commandeer government property during an emergency. The schooner had made it possible for him to escape a war. Now, though, he wondered if he was landing in an even worse situation. He began to question the wisdom of revealing anything about himself. "What work options are available?" he asked. "Unemployment in Port Haven is at 58%, the PA answered, "nor is a work contract likely to provide sufficient revenue to meet your obligation." Its nuances said he had less chance than an ice cube in hell of finding a job that would pay off his debt. "What about a loan?" "We are willing to take your ship in lieu of payment. Do you consent?" Scowling, he almost refused, but what else could he offer? At least if he signed the ship over to the Edgeworld PA, they would be responsible for its repairs. He debated options with himself, but in the end he answered simply, "Yes." Dazed and tired, Kelrick walked along the starport concourse with everything he owned. His clothes. His suede trousers and white silk shirt were hand-tailored, of the highest quality, but wrinkles creased the fabric and scorch marks darkened his sleeves. His slight limp had been with him for 18 years. He walked in bare feet. He had nothing else to his name except his gold and gems. Heavy gold guards circled his wrists and ankles, the metal engraved in a language no one spoke anymore. The guards were old, ancient. So were the gold bands under his shirt on his biceps, 6 on one arm, 5 on the other. 18 years ago, the guards and bands would have summoned a fortune, more for their archaeological value than for the gold. The innocuous pouch hanging from his belt contained dice, but no ordinary dice. Diamonds, rubies, emeralds, sapphires, opals, more. It held a glittering rainbow of wealth. Their worth didn't lie so much in rarity. Perfect gems could easily be made using molecular assemblers to place atoms in crystal lattices. The value of these came from their authenticity. They had been formed by eons of geological processes, rather than in a lab, and they were almost flawless. It gave them a worth well beyond their mundane synthetic counterparts. He had no idea of the current value for his riches, but it made no difference. He never intended to sell them. They were his only link to the wife and children he had been forced to leave on Koba, the family he would never again see. So he continued along the wide vaulted concourse. People thronged the area, a bustling, shoving, humming crowd. For the first time in 18 years, he walked free. No guards watched him, no one tried to stop him. No political powers controlled his actions. Despite his towering height, massive build, bare feet, scorched clothes, and gold metallic coloring, no one spared him a second glance. He soon saw why. Edgeworld was a small backwater planet, yet citizens from all over the Skolian Imperialate crammed its port. Within that vast, varied throng, he simply didn't stand out. Then he saw them. A group of young people wearing overalls with the insignia of the Allied Worlds of Earth on their shoulders. Stunned, he looked around, trying to clear his mind and concentrate. Now that he paid more attention, he saw them everywhere, citizens from the Allied Worlds freely mixing with his people, the Skolians. In his time, the visas and permissions required for Allied citizens to visit Skolian worlds had been so extensive, it kept out most of them. Now Allieds were everywhere, not only civilians but military personnel as well. What power shifts had taken place? His unease increased. His family exerted, or had exerted, a great deal of influence within the hierarchy of Skolian power. If the political situation had changed, what did that bode for him? He became aware of someone behind him, a hand closing around his pouch. Before his mind fully registered what was happening, his body toggled into combat mode. He whirled around with enhanced reflexes and punched the chest of the man trying to rob him. No, not man. Youth. Lanky and ragged, the boy was about 19 with straggly brown hair. It didn't matter that Kelrick's internal biomech systems were damaged. His hydraulics still had enough control over his body to respond to commands from the computer node implanted in his spine. Even with his enhancements at diminished power, he had twice the normal human strength and reflex speed. Fortunately, his node worked well enough to moderate his response, so it fit the situation. He only knocked the thief away, into a group of startled tourists. The boy stumbled backward, scattering people, and thudded into a column. He slid down the column until he was sitting on the ground. The young man stared up at Kelrick, his face turning as pale as a trapped snow ferret. Kelrick blinked. Then he turned on his heel. A ring of onlookers had formed, but they jumped out of his path now. He stalked away, angry at himself for causing the scene. Had he been in better condition, he wouldn't have struck the boy. Just turning around fast would have been enough. He hoped the thief didn't go to the authorities claiming assault. The youth had no idea how lucky he had been. If Kelrick's spinal node hadn't controlled his reflexes, that boy would be dead. As Kelrick's adrenaline surge eased, his body switched out of combat mode. He once more became aware of the low-level nausea that was almost always with him now. His fatigue had grown worse. Using his enhanced systems for such a brief time shouldn't have drained him this way. His physical resources were far too diminished. The concourse opened into a huge rotunda, the open space in its center circled by 5 levels of balconies. Kelrick found himself on the 3rd level. He glanced across the rotunda and stopped. Taskmakers, 3 of them. They were threading their way through the crowds down on the 2nd level. Taskmakers, traitor slaves. 3 interstellar powers vied for control in settled space. The Skolian Imperialate of Kelrick's people, the Allied Worlds of Earth, and the traitors. The traitors called themselves the Eubian Concord, a euphemism Kelrick found the ultimate in double talk. Their citizens had no choice but to be in concord with their conquerors. Taskmakers made up the bulk of the traitor population, over 1 trillion strong. Providers, the valued pleasure slaves, were rare and had far less freedom. Taskmakers lived fairly normal lives. Some were well off in their own right and exerted a degree of authority among other taskmakers. For all that, they were still slaves, but no one owned these taskmakers anymore. Under Skolian law, any slave entering Skolian territory became free. How had these 3 escaped to Edgeworld? Except it wasn't only 3. Now that Kelrick looked, he saw other taskmakers among the crowds. He recognized them by the high-tech collars around their necks and the guards on their wrists and ankles. They must have just arrived on Edgeworld. He didn't doubt they would soon have those signs of their former bondage removed. Maybe that was why no one paid him any heed. They probably mistook his wrist and ankle guards for slave restraints. What the blazes had happened? Great shifts in power must have taken place if large numbers of traitor slaves were escaping to Skolian worlds. Kelrick started to walk again. He had to find information, an open computer room where he could log into one of the public webs. But every console room he passed was closed. That disquieted him as much as all the Allied and traitor citizens. Public console rooms never closed. The webs tied civilization together. He walked